Sairam, dear listeners, and a warm good morning to all of you. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and I welcome you to this show. I offer humble pranams at Swami's feet on behalf of all of you. I promised to take on a question this week. Tomorrow happens to be a very important festival in the Prashanti calendar, and I thought it would be appropriate to listen to something related to that. Yes, tomorrow is the festival of Mahashivratri, a festival that has always been celebrated with much grandeur in Prashanti Nilayam, the night of Lord Shiva. But before coming to the incidents I'm going to be featuring on today's show, let us begin with what is the significance of this festival and why do we celebrate this particular day as Shivratri. Swami has spoken during many Shivratri discourses about it, but here is a small narration on the theme that I would be playing for you.
What exactly is meant by Shivratri and why is so much importance given to it? Baba has explained the significance. During the month, the moon waxes and wanes, taking 15 days for each process. The 13th day of the new moon and the full moon is called Trayodashi, which is followed by the Chaturdashi. Shivratri comes in between the Trayodashi and the Chaturdashi after the full moon. It comes on the 14th day of the dark half of the month, when the moon is all but invisible, just a minute fraction remains visible to man. The moon is the presiding deity of the mind. The mind is the source of all the entangling desires and emotions. The mind is, therefore, almost powerless this day. If only this night is spent in vigil and in the presence of the divine, it can be fully conquered and man can realize his freedom. So, every month, the 14th day of the dark half of the month is prescribed for more intense sadhana, and once a year, this Mahashivratri, the great night of Shiva, is laid down for the great consummation. Swami therefore says that vigilance this night is to be secured by sadhana, that is, by means of bhajana, or the reading of sacred texts, or listening to the reading of such text, and not by attending film shows, or gambling, or playing cards. Be engaged in seeing good, listening to good, speaking good, thinking good, doing good. That is the program for the vigil tonight. Make it also the program for your entire life. The moon waxes and wanes once every month. Thus, there must be a Shivratri every month. But how come we do not celebrate each of these? There is a legend for that. It all started with Brahma and Vishnu, who were arguing over their relative supremacy. Their vain arguments were interrupted by a superluminous glow from a strange and blazing pillar. Its shape reminiscent of the linga. Both of them sped towards this indescribable flaming light, which grew before their eyes into infinity, piercing the earth and extending through the heavens. The two gods decided to seek the beginning and the end of this burning immensity. Brahma, taking the form of a swan, flew upwards, and Vishnu dove down, acquiring the shape of a boar. Both the gods, however, returned exhausted. At that moment, the central part of the pillar split open and Shiva revealed himself in his full glory. Thunderous laughter, or the sound of Om, issued from the pillar, filling the sky. The scriptures say that strict austerities must be observed and pujas done on the morning of Shivaratri. In addition, the devotees must fast and keep vigil throughout the night, meditating intensely on Lord Shiva. This has been the set pattern for devotees from aeons.
Well, that is why this festival is very special by itself. But this festival of Shivaratri was made multiple times more special by the way Swami marked it, isn't it? The night-long Akhanda Bhajan, the Vibhuti Abhishekam, and of course the Lingodbhavam itself. It reminds me of an incident that happened when they were digging a pit for laying the foundation stone for the Partha Mandir in the early 1940s. When they dug, they found dozens of lingam peetams. That is the basis on which lingams are placed and worshipped. But there were no lingams, and however much they dug, they couldn't find any. When they asked Swami, he gave a mischievous smile, pointed to his stomach and said, "The lingams are here." And for many years thereafter, Swami manifested those lingams and reminded us constantly in whose presence we were celebrating Shivaratri. Talking of Swami being that Shiva himself, I can't but recollect one more incident, an amazing one that happened in the early 1940s. And instead of me narrating it, I'm going to play a clip from a talk by Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram. For the person involved in this incident was her grandfather, Seshagiri Rao Garu, the first pujari of Swami's Mandir.
My grandfather came to Swami in 1943. He came in a very strange way. He didn't want to come. They dragged him along. My aunts had seen Swami 6 months before that, in the year 1942. And they had seen a young Swami who was just 16 years old at that time. And they had been so moved by his singing and his message that they had gone back home, my two aunts, and Swami had told them to come back for the Dasara Navaratri celebrations, the 10-day celebration that happens in the month of October. So they wanted my grandfather to take them along to Puttaparthi, because in those days the journey to Puttaparthi was so difficult. I'm sure you've all read the books and the horrendous journey to Puttaparthi. It is only 100 miles from Bangalore, where my family live. All the members of my family live in Bangalore. It's only 100 miles, but it would take us more than a day and a half to get to Puttaparthi. We would leave the Bangalore city around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and reach a town, small village in Andhra Pradesh called Penaconda, around 2 o'clock in the night. And the train would stop there and we would get out, and at 2 o'clock in the night there was nothing there, just a granite block which was the station. There was nothing else there. It was just a big stone, and you got out of the train at 2 o'clock in the night and you just sat on that. I remember all of my childhood having spent many, 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 many hours in this place, in Penaconda. We just took out our sheets from our little bags and we just spread it on the stone and we just sat there or lay down or dozed off till about 6 in the morning. And around 6:30 or so, 7 o'clock in the morning, we would all be put into a little cart and taken to another place called Bukkapatna. That was the next village. And you got out there. And then once you got out there, there were two choices. Either you could walk to the river Chitravati, for those of you who have been to Puttaparthi, that is the river there. You could walk up to the river and wade through the water to cross the river and get to Prashanthi Nilayam. There was no Prashanthi Nilayam, but to get to Puttaparthi, the old mandir. Or you could get into a bullock cart, and the bullock cart guy, if he felt like it, would take us across the river. So this would be our journey. We would have left the previous day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This is the following morning, around 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock, when you're going through the river, going on the bullock cart, and arriving there in Prashanthi Nilayam, soaked to your skin. But on the other side of the bank was our beloved Lord, waiting to help us out of the bullock carts. So on one of these trips, my grandfather was asked to go with the ladies, because they couldn't go by themselves without a male escort on these journeys that were so difficult. And he was an Orthodox Brahmin gentleman in those days when things like that mattered. And he said, I'm not coming to see some 16-year-old. He's not even a Brahmin. He has never gone to school. He doesn't know Sanskrit. I'm not coming. So the ladies pestered him and said, no, you don't have to come. You just escort us all the way to Puttaparthi, because we want to see him again. He's asked us to come. So he said, in that village of Puttaparthi, there was a relative of ours who lived there, who was the priest of the temple there. So he said, all right, I will accompany you all, but I am not coming to see this young boy. Do you think I'm crazy to come and see a 16-year-old, uneducated, non-Brahmin, illiterate person and believe that he is some kind of an important... You people have all gone crazy. I'm not going to come and see him. I believe in my Lord Shiva that I worship every day. So I will drop you off there and go to this relative's house and spend my time there, and that's about it. So they finally convinced him. So they were happy to have a male gentleman to go with them, and they did this whole trip of the bullock cart and the train and the bus and the being stoned in Penaconda and everything else. And he was scolding them as the time went by, as he saw what the journey was like. And finally, they arrived in the old mandir. If any of you have been to Puttaparthi and have not been to the old mandir, please do so. It has changed a lot now, but still I think the stone where Swami used to sit is still there. So they arrived there in the evening, around 5:30 in the evening. And Swami in those days used to sit on that stone, and there was no bhajans as we have it, no devotional singing the way we do it these days. They used to just sing long songs, one after the other. So one person would sing a song, and the second person would sing a second song. Swami would sing the third one, but Swami would join in the bhajan too. So this was going on, and at that time in the evening, while the bhajan was going on, these four people, my grandfather and my two aunts, arrived, and as they entered the compound of the old Pathamandiram, old mandir, there was Swami sitting on the rock, and here comes the gentleman who's supposed to be helping these two ladies. This is my grandfather, Sheshagiri Rao. And he looks, takes one look at Swami that he had vowed not to, because he was going to go away. He takes one look at him, 2 seconds, and bang, he's fainted on the floor. So you can imagine these two aunts. He was supposed to be protecting them, and here he is on the floor in a dead faint. So Swami gets up from the middle of the bhajan and said, don't worry. Helps them carry this old man, this 58-year-old man, into Swami's room, put him on the bed. And Swami says, don't worry, he's going to be like this for 2 days. You people go and attend the bhajan. So these poor ladies, this is the second time they're seeing Swami. They have a dead faint father. They're sitting and trying to sing bhajans. Talk about concentration. And there is Swami happily sitting on the rock, continues with the bhajan. And then the bhajan gets over and they say, what has happened to our father? Swami says, don't worry. He'll tell you when he wakes up, but he's all right. I'll look after him. So for 1.5 days, Swami looks after this old man. Not old man, 58 or 60 years old at that time. He was still in service. Pours water into his mouth every 2 hours. Materializes vibhuti, puts it on his head every 2 hours. This goes on for 2 days, and these poor women don't know if he's going to recover or not. 2 days later, he gets up. And he's a completely changed man. He says, "You ladies, you two daughters of mine, you can go back to Bangalore, but I'm not coming back." They're like, "You said you were not going to come here. What do you mean you're not coming back with us?" So he says, "No, when I walked into that compound and I saw this young boy sitting on the rock, in his place I had the vision of Lord Shiva. In his head I saw the moon, in his neck I saw the snake, and on his forehead I saw the third eye. This is the Lord Shiva that I've been worshipping for the past 50 years. When I've seen him, why would I leave him? I'm not coming back." So he resigned his job from Puttaparthi. He never came back. He would visit Bangalore, he would visit us with Swami when Swami came to Bangalore. But he lived there till 1967-65, till he passed away.
Imagine how it would be. You spend 50 years worshipping Lord Shiva and you come to Swami and he shows himself as Lord Shiva himself. But to receive that blessing and make that experience matter, it took every minute in that 50 years that was spent in worship, wasn't it? When after sadhana, a boon, a blessing or experience as such is granted, that moment changes your whole life completely. This was an incident where Swami granted a vision to one devotee. But in the year 1963, an elaborate divine drama was played out, at the end of which Swami declared to all how he was in reality the Shiva Shakti principle itself in a human form. Yes, the time when Swami took upon himself the paralytic stroke. In fact, it was much, much more than just that. I wish to play for you now today an account of the events that occurred on that occasion, the traumatic turn, the tense days, and the miraculous and profound conclusion. This happened a few days before the Guru Purnima of 1963, and the narration starts with Professor Kasturi saying how Swami surprised him one day when he asked Kasturi to make an announcement.
"It began on Friday evening, the 28th June, 1963. Baba asked me to announce he would not grant interviews for a week. Why? There was nothing in the immediate calendar that was out of the ordinary. The question was on all our minds."
The answer to Professor Kasturi's question came, dreadful and grievous, early the next morning. While moving into his room on the first floor from the southern veranda, Baba spoke of a reeling sensation and fell onto the floor. Kasturi writes,
"I was with him then, and though I was holding him by the hand, I could soften, only slightly, the impact of the fall."
Even as Baba fell, the left hand clenched its fist. The left leg stiffened. The toes became taut. The face twitched and muscles drew the lips to the left. The tongue lolled. The left eye appeared to have lost its sight. The clock ticked the minutes away. As the hour hand moved relentlessly, but ever so slowly onward, their anxiety thickened into fear. Gloom filled the room and spread gradually all around the nilayam. Dr. B. G. Krishnamurti said that Baba was in coma, that Baba demonstrated symptoms of apoplexy. The jaws were locked tight. The pulse rate was ranging from 84 to 100. This doctor, who treated patients in the Satyasai Hospital, routinely placed more reliance on the curative value of the vibhuti blessed by Baba than on drugs. Now that he found Baba stricken, he could only pray to Baba to cure himself. Meanwhile, someone who feared that the illness was genuine hastened by car to Bangalore and brought with him Dr. Prasanna Simha Rao, the Assistant Director of Medical Services, Mysore. Here are the doctor's own words.
"When I was taken into the room of the first floor of the nilayam, I saw there lying prostrate the body of Sri Satyasai Baba in a posture assumed by a patient in coma. Respiration was hissing at times. The left side of the body, the upper and lower limbs, were rigidly held in a position of extensor tone. There were gross twitchings of the face, occasionally on the right side. The head would be suddenly tossed to one side or the other, with a groan of anguish and the utterance of ununderstandable syllables, which was the result of an impairment of the faculty of speech. The differential diagnosis of such conditions in a person of about 30 years, after excluding remote possibilities, pinned me down to that of tubercular meningitis, with perhaps a tuberculoma, silent for a long time. A diagnostic lumbar puncture was an immediate necessity for the professional assessment of the case. My attempts to administer glucose solution intravenously was, by a gesture and movement of the body, foiled completely by Baba, leaving me utterly bewildered and helpless in the face of his will. Having completely resigned to his will, I returned to Bangalore on Sunday evening, bereft of all hopes of having again his darshan in the physical form assumed by him for this incarnation.
Baba was unconscious all the time. He evinced only faint gleams of awareness, as when he pushed away the doctor's hand when injection was attempted. The body perspired a great deal, but he could be given only a few spoonfuls of water, the spoon being inserted after pressing the jaws apart. He was apparently severely exhausted. Moreover, he suffered from what Dr. Krishnamurti named angina pectoris, paroxysms of intense pain originating at the breastbone and radiating to the left shoulder and arm. The physical frame groaned. Residents of Prashanti, standing tiptoe under the window, heard and wept. To relieve the exhaustion, they could give only occasional drops of glucose water or lemon juice, parting the tightly clenched teeth. On Monday, the 31st of July, 1968, Baba intensified the atmosphere of tragedy. Summoning near his bed those who were present, he gestured and lisped to make them understand that the tasks allotted to them should be carried out with undiminished ardor. It was a heart-rending experience to catch those hazy sounds and interpret them, for the words emerged from a mouth gone awry and tongue turned to the left. He warned them not to frighten the other devotees with their fear. Deal gently with them. Talk sweetly to them, he seemed to say. Give them vibhuti. Ask them to leave for home and come some other time. He declined medicine and nursing, brushing aside angrily the spoon which had a few drops of coramine. The pulse registered danger after each such hazardous journey. Those present could only wring their hands and pray. The fact that it was a stroke of paralysis could not be announced, and so a variety of rumors circulated in and around the Nilayam to explain the ominous gloom. The wildest of these was that Baba was under the maleficent influence of black magic. Others decided that he had gone into samadhi. Still others guessed that he had taken a vow of silence and inaction. Perhaps the villagers of Puttaparthi were more competent interpreters, for they had known of his unconscious days at Uravakonda, when he had gone out of his body to save a devotee from calamity. They said
Baba was about to enter a new chapter in his history, as he had done after that incident at Uravakonda while in his teens. Tuesday arrived. Baba showed signs of consciousness more often and for longer periods. Referring to the visit of the doctor, Bhagavan said, "He can only take darshan and leave. Injections are inadvisable in such cases. This will last 5 days in all. Tomorrow, the pain will be less. I had 2 heart attacks these 3 days. You must have heard the groans. No one else could have survived." He gestured and smiled.
Dr. B. Sitaramaya, who was the medical officer in charge of the Nilayam Hospital, was summoned by a telegram. He came on Tuesday evening to the bedside. Tuesday night was filled with fear. Each of Baba's groans caused excruciating agony to those who heard them. Wednesday dawned. About 9 a.m., Baba, who was extremely exhausted, showed signs of sinking. He struggled for breath. Hiccups tormented him. Kasturi writes,
"What a tremendous responsibility. This on our aged shoulders. We gathered under the mango trees, and with tears streaming down our cheeks, measured the pros and cons."
Just then, glad tidings arrived. Baba had regained consciousness. The hiccups had lost their rigor. But gladness was gone when, 2 hours later, his breathing worsened. He gasped and rolled. His feet and palms became cold. They prayed to him amidst sobs. The doctors sat on the floor and leaned against the wall, resting their hands on their heavy heads. For 4 full hours, Baba broiled those close by in mortal anguish. Then he opened his eyes, looked around, and smiled. About an hour later, he told them in his pathetically ineffective vocabulary, supplemented by gestures with the palsied right hand, the events of those 4 hours. Kasturi and others understood him to say,
"The mind is a 1,000 petal lotus, each petal directing it outward into some facet of the objective world.
In the very center of the lotus is the flame of the I principle. The flame is ever unsteady, veering now towards one petal, now to another. But if through the exercise of will you keep it steady and straight, the I is unaffected by the events that happen to the body. During those 4 hours, I held the flame straight. I was away, apart.
I was watching the body from above, myself unconcerned, unaffected."
About 7 p.m., Baba gestured, "All of you should sleep around here this night. It betokened a crisis." "Will there be a heart attack this night?" someone dared inquire. Baba replied, "Yes." Kasturi has recorded,
"That night was the longest, the darkest, and the most dreadful in the lives of us 15 mortals. The heart attack happened. We listened to the groans. We prayed to Baba to assuage the pain and assure us of the victory we sought."
At last came the day of relief, Thursday. Baba had said, "On the 6th day, the pain will lose its severity, and the attacks on the heart will cease." The sun rose over the hills across the Chitravati. Baba announced that the pain, as well as the burning sensation in the chest, had gone. The very first order he gave after this declaration was, "Arrange now for all the devotees to get darshan. They are broken by despair." They pleaded that the darshan be granted 2 days later, on Saturday, Guru Purnima Day, when thousands gathered at the Nilayam from all the states of India to pay homage to their guru, master, and teacher. They hoped that he could recoup himself more to bear the strain that darshan involves. Baba asked Kasturi to announce at the prayer hall that darshan will be granted to all on Guru Purnima. He insisted the assembled bhaktas receive an accurate description of his physical condition so that they would be saved from the sudden shock at the sight of Baba. Kasturi confessed,
"I announced in Telugu the condition of his leg, hand, eye, tongue and face, but I broke down when I saw the agony on the faces that learnt for the first time the awful truth. I had to repeat the announcement in English, Kannada, Tamil and Malayalam, but I could only speak in sobs."
The prayer hall was packed as never before. People from many villages around Puttaparthi had come to know that Baba was to give darshan for the first time since the onset of his illness. They came in large numbers. The broad spaces around the Nilayam were filled. Baba was carefully brought down the 18 circular steps to the ground floor. Major Dr. M. Panu of the government hospital, Palladam, writes,
"I saw Baba moving down with the help of three bhaktas. His left leg was lifted over the doorstep by one of them. He had a kerchief around his head and face to bind the halo of hair that had gone awry and hide the twitching of the facial muscles from the eyes of the devotees. His gait was the characteristic hemiplegic one, the paralytic left leg being dragged in a semicircle, the toes scraping the floor. Seeing Baba in that condition, even the bravest wept aloud."
The wail was sudden and loud. Many inferred that it was the end. "Why did you bring him down?" they cried in anger. Baba was placed in a silver chair on the floor, propped up by pillows. As soon as he was in position, a pillow was placed over his chest, and the limp left hand was lifted by Raja Reddy and placed on it. Seeing this, a gasp arose from every breast. Baba signaled to Kasturi. The professor knelt at his side to catch what he was trying to say. Kasturi rose and announced to the grief-stricken gathering of about 5,000 people,
"Baba says, do not grieve. This is not my ailment. This is an ailment I've taken over. I can never fall ill. No, never. Do not feel dispirited. If you lose heart, it will pain me."
Then he signed to Kasturi to speak to them at some length, and he signed that he would speak next. Many felt that Baba had exerted himself too much already. With his impaired resources, they feared the consequence of further speaking. Kasturi called upon everyone to pray to Baba, propped up on pillows on the silver chair, to cure himself at least by the next new moon. "For the full moon of today is blocked out for us by this unbearable sorrow. Let the next new moon become a full moon for us all and for the world." Baba indicated that the microphone be held near his lips. Slowly he whispered into it in swollen, half-suppressed syllables. But nobody could make out what he was trying to say. He repeated it twice. Then someone caught the meaning and repeated it on the mic. Baba was asking them, "Can you hear me?" This raised another groan. He was heard, but alas, it tore their hearts. It was too indistinct. Evidently, Baba was too tired by that attempt to speak, for he gestured for water to drink. It was brought by Krishnappa in a silver tumbler and held to his lips by Raja Reddy. His palsied right hand came towards it. He tried to hold it. His fingers slipped into it. The fingers dipped. He sipped a few drops. He sprinkled with the fingers of his right hand a little water on the limp left hand on the pillow above his chest. He sprinkled the water, faintly shaking the fingers, on the left leg, too. He stroked the left hand with the right, and with both hands stroked the left leg. He rose. The pillow fell off. All could hear his divine voice calling everybody present, as was ever his wont. Prema Swarupulara, Prema Swarupulara, Prema
Swarupulara. People could not believe their eyes and ears, but when they realized that Baba was standing before them, speaking, they jumped about in joy. They danced, they shouted jays, they wept. Some were so overcome with ecstatic gratitude that they laughed hysterically and ran wild amongst the crowds rushing in. Oh, it was the miracle of miracles. It shot all in an instant from the deepest pit of gloom into the seventh heaven of delight. Baba's silver voice awakened all to attention.
Embodiments of love. For him who has no refuge, God is the refuge. That is the reason I had to take on this disease that one forlorn bhakta was to suffer from. He would not have survived it, nor could he come through the four heart attacks I took on. My dharma is bhakta rakshana. I had to rescue him. Of course, this is not the first time I have taken on the illness of those I want to save. Even in the previous body at Shirdi, I had this responsibility. This is my leela, my nature. It is part of the task for which I have come. Shishta Rakshana, protection of the virtuous.
He spoke for over an hour with the same eloquence, the same compassion, the same humor, and the same love that he evinces always. Then, raising the voice a little, he said,
I have been keeping back from you all these years one secret about me. The time has come when I can reveal it to you, for this is a sacred day. I am Shiva Shakti, born in the Gotra of Bharadwaj, according to a boon won by that sage from Shiva and Shakti. Shiva himself was born in the Gotra of that sage as Sai Baba of Shirdi. Shiva and Shakti have incarnated as myself in this Gotra now. Shakti alone will incarnate as the third Sai in the same Gotra in Mysore state. This illness has to be borne by Shakti, for she incurred the ire of her lord by neglecting to notice Bharadwaj for full 8 days at Kailash, their home. As a consequence of that neglect, Bharadwaj had suffered a stroke. Shiva sprinkled restorative water and cured him. Today, you saw the illness of Shakti, the left half, cured by Shiva, the right half, by the same means. These matters are beyond human ken. So, I had kept it from you so long. But now that within the knowledge of so many, Shakti suffered and Shiva saved, It is time you knew this. The bhakta who was saved by my taking over is only the immediate cause. The remote cause is the boon and the retribution.
Now when we look back at this episode, we look at it as an epochal milestone in Swami's life. But what a harrowing experience it must have been for those around to see Swami, who is the very embodiment of grace and majesty, wince and groan in pain. Many a times one wonders, should one stop oneself when one feels pain seeing Swami's apparent pain, or should we just look on and smile, calling it a maya of his? Maybe sometimes it is good to get lost in his play and take his pain seriously. Especially when Swami would speak in his discourses expressing pain about certain aspects of our behavior as an individual or a group. Swami did not want us to brush it aside as maya, thinking how can Swami feel emotions of being upset and so on. I guess Swami did want us to feel his pain and also respond through action. Because Swami is not Shiva Shakti or Sarva Devata Atita Swarupa alone for us. He is also our Divine Mother and Father. And His pain, even if it is a divine pretense, should move us to action and transformation. Before I conclude this show, I'm going to play for you a short discourse clip where Swami clearly explains who He is, who Sai Baba is.
Sai Baba, anekunte padamulu endukodunu Sai. Sai. Sahaga divine. Ai enuga ai mai tai ivanta mother koka arthamulu.
In the words Sai Baba, Sai stands for Sai. Sa means divine. Ai stands for mother. Sai stands for divine mother.
Baba anaga father.
Baba means father.
Divine mother and father ani kudunu ee Sai Baba kartham.
This name Sai Baba has also got the meaning divine mother and father.
Sai Baba anadaniki Samba Shiva anadaniki rendu oke artham.
To say Sai Baba and to say Samba Shiva, both of them have the same meaning.
Sa Amba Shiva, Amba mother, Shiva father. Sa Amba Shiva, Sa Ayi Baba. Rendu okati.
Samba Shiva is speaking to Sa, divine Amba, mother, Shiva, father. This also means divine mother and father. Just like Sa Ayi Baba is also divine mother and father.
Mother and father, rendu kudunga undatam chetane Shiva Shaktatmaka Swarupam.
Because there is the aspect of mother and there is the aspect of father, because both are present, this is referred to as Shiva Shakti Atmaka Swarupa.
Mother vale lalinchi, alinchi, palinchi, anandamana andinchi, varik aneka rakamainatuvanti anukoolamulu chekurchatamu. Tandri vale shikshinchi, kandinchi, bayapetti, daniki sariyainatuvanti unnata sthayiki konipovatamu.
Like mother, to be tender, to be soft, and to make you feel happy and to give you all happiness. Like father, punish you when necessary, criticize you when necessary, and through these methods take you to a high level of attainment. This is the purpose of the mother and father.
Loka sambandhinchinatuvanti tallidandrulaina kodanu tama swarthamunu kontha varaku gurtinchukoni tama swartham ittama itharulu kontha varaku kumarulu kodanu dandinchavachunu kani ee divine mother and father స్వార్థరహితమైనటువంటి దీంతో ఉన్నత స్థాయిని పోవాలనేటువంటి ఉద్దేశంతో మీకు పవిత్రమైనటువంటి స్థానాన్ని అందించాలని చెప్పని, పవిత్రమైన ప్రాప్తిని కూడా మేము చేకూర్చాలనేటువంటి యొక్క సంకల్పంతో శిక్షించటమే తప్ప అది శిక్షగా మీరు భావించకూడదు, అది ఒక రక్షగానే మీరు విశ్వసించాలి.
మదర్ అండ్ ఫాదర్ ఇన్ ది వరల్డ్ సెన్స్ సమ్ టైమ్స్ దే మే బికమ్ సెల్ఫిష్, sometimes they may punish you in a manner which smacks of selfishness, but this divine mother and father has no selfishness in him. He is selfless. Whatever punishment he gives you, it is utterly selfless, and such punishment is intended solely for enabling you to realize your mistake and to take you higher and higher.
That was a discourse which Swami gave as part of the 1974 summer course. Brothers and sisters, we all can truly and wholeheartedly address each other that way, can't we? We share the same Swami who is our divine mother and father. As Swami would say, a true son or daughter must inherit the properties of the parent. The compassion, the purity, confidence, and of all the wisdom that we are essentially divine. And to achieve that, we don't have to do anything extraordinary. We just have to start with what Swami says about Shivratri. When the influence of the mind is least, we must try to sanctify time by Namasmarana, Swami says. Swami is the supremely effulgent sun. When we turn to him, our minds will be bleached out of sight, just like the moon is invisible during daylight. Having received such a blessing, let us try and sanctify every moment thereafter by constantly remembering him. Dear listeners, I'll leave you with a beautiful song and wishing you all in advance a happy, holy and Sai-filled Shivratri.
అహంకార మే అంధకారము ఇహ బంధాలకు కారణము అహమునుగుని మీ అమృతత్వముకు దారి చూపుమా రావణ మర్దన కనుల ముందర నిండు కొలువైన తండ్రి నీకిదే వందనం మా గుండెలలో తాండవమాడెను నిన్ను చూడగానందం
కనుల ముందర నిండు కొలువైన తండ్రి నీకిదే వందనం మా గుండెలలో తాండవమాడెను నిన్ను చూడగానందం
ఆనందం బ్రహ్మ ఆనందం ఆనందం పరమానందం
Bye.